Welcome to the Level Up Artist Podcast. We're your hosts, Adriana Ame and
Jackie Sanders. We are two art professionals sharing forward the advice and business lessons we have learned along our creative journeys.
We talk to artists, leaders, and art professionals to demystify the creative process and discover new ways to succeed as a career-minded artist.
If you find value in these conversations, please go ahead and subscribe. This will help other creatives like you find our podcast, and you'll be notified when we drop a new episode every Tuesday.
So on today's episode, we're really excited to have Michelle Wilkie with us. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you.
Hi. Yes, we are so excited to have you on the podcast today. We're excited to discuss your artistic journey, your approach to art quilts, and how you've built momentum in your art business, as well as recording a bonus segment on your transition from corporate America to full-time artist for our podcast supporters at levelupartist.com. But real quick, before we dive in, let's go ahead and share a little bit more about your background for our listeners who may not be familiar with you or your work.
All right. So Michelle is a textile artist and designer of modern quilts. Her artistic practice revolves around modern quilting, where she seamlessly blends traditional techniques with a contemporary twist, embracing both improvisation and minimalism. Michelle is currently exhibiting and participating in a community exhibition at the North Carolina Museum of Art in conversation with the Layered Legacies exhibition. In the past year, she's had a solo exhibition at the Durham Art Guild's Golden Belt Gallery, at the Paige Walker Center of Art and History. She has also participated in several group juried shows, has had her work shown in France and Italy, ooh la la, and locally in the US at places like Artfields, Cam Raleigh, Truist Gallery, 311 Gallery, Artspace, and I'm sure the list goes on. She has also completed a 6-month residency with the Durham Art Guild, participated in the Penland School of Craft winter residency, and upcoming, she is going to be attending the Oxbow School of Arts in the summer. She has also been featured in several magazines and has had work published in books like Modern Quilts, Design in the New Century. So that is a lot. Oh my goodness.
Yes. And of course, that is a very extensive list of all of your accomplishments recently. But Michelle, when it comes to the work that you make, how would you describe your work to someone who hasn't seen it before?
When you asked me that question, I had to think about that a little bit. So I would say it's an abstraction piece. I enjoy playing with color and geometric shapes and putting all that into fabric.
Oh, I love that. That That's definitely gone. Is. I know we are all fans here of abstract geometric form. So it's, I personally admire your work so much, just seeing how that manifests in such a different material than what I as a painter or muralist make. So it's super cool, super cool work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I enjoy using that. So I do a lot of photography with my work. So usually it looks abstract, but if you see that inspiration image, you can actually see how it has translated from the inspiration to the abstraction. So I enjoy telling that story.
Nice. Oh, we love it. Well, speaking of your story, growing up, Michelle, when did you first get interested in making art? And was there always an interest in textiles?
So I'm lucky because I come from quite an artistic family, especially on my dad's side. So my aunt is a printmaker, and she teaches and travels all over the place. And my dad is an oil painter. So I remember drawing in competitions in elementary school, or primary school, as we say in New Zealand, right from probably at least 8. And I remember winning some, you know, like there was a bank that would have a poster competition every year. So I did a lot of drawing and then moved on to chalk pastels. So during university, I had a love for chalk pastels, and never sewed except for my home economics class, which I made a pillowcase, which is also strange because my mum is an amazing dressmaker, a seamstress, but I never really sewed with her. So It wasn't till 10 years ago that I actually even had a sewing machine and made my first pillowcase.
Nice. A proper pillowcase, I'm sure, by then.
Yeah, a pillow
Probably
you
an
put on the couch.
improvement. Probably an improvement over the home economics must do it for class situation.
For
Oh, I
sure.
love that so much. I love that idea too. And you know, you saying printmaking actually makes a lot of sense to have that kind of, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot of parallels perhaps in the type of work the three of us do actually, with more hard edge shapes where printmaking actually is, it feels compatible, if you will. And didn't you do like a big ink wood print like a year or two ago, I think?
Yeah, last year around this time. So I am excited to have a studio where I can actually do some woodblock printing because there's a
Yeah.
sink and everything. So that'll be fun to get back
Oh yeah.
into picking out some more woodblock printing.
Oh, can't wait to see the intersections of these different materials. Now, Michelle, you grew up in New Zealand, which is awesome, you know, with a diverse Pacific Island community. And I saw, you know, nearby, you moved to various countries and then eventually ended up in North Carolina, where, of course, you have a slightly different language, weather, culture. Culture. Did this have any kind of impact on your creative endeavors?
I think it does. In New Zealand, especially where I grew up in New Zealand, having that strong community means that wherever I go, I tend to be a community builder, which as an introvert isn't always easy. But I love making community and being part of a community and do whatever I can for that community when I'm part of it. So from my I think the last year with the Durham Art Guild has allowed me to build that community and with ArtSpace, build a community in the art world. So that's really how it kind of manifests in me is because of the community outreach and being part of a community, I think.
I
More
love
so
that.
than in more so than in my art. But I think the geometric shapes that I enjoy come from, you know, being part of a Pacific Island community that play with shapes has always been part, you know, part of the art within the community.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and for our listeners who are not aware of you and your work and your role within Raleigh, I can attest that I feel like every event I go to, Michelle, like you're there. You're like at every opening, every artist talk, and very recently, we're excited to share that by the time this episode is live, you will have moved into a studio at ArtSpace down the hall from us. So we're
Yay.
so excited to have you physically in our direct community at ArtSpace with a studio there. Even though I feel like I still like see you very frequently between like, yeah, Durham Art Guild events and then also ArtSpace events. You can definitely tell that that community and connection with other artists is a huge part of the work, which of course we're a huge proponent of on this podcast also. Because I think that's especially going from a different country or a different industry, really leaning into the artist community in any town or city, I think can be really pivotal for artists. Like you really seeing each other as these are my creative coworkers, as I call them. Like just like other industries, you have networking events, you have, oh, let's talk within the office, the cubicle talk. That's what we do here as artists as well. And I think you're a huge, huge proponent of that as well.
And one of the things I decided, well, once I quit my job a year ago, I can't believe it's been a year, but it's been just over a year, but also getting the Durham Art Guild residency. If I was going to make, I needed to make the most of that since this was kind of my full-time job now, right? So you see, I tried to go to every event I could because of the networking opportunities. And I've met some amazing people too, which has been both artists and then also people that are important within the art world, which I, you know, if I had to give advice to anybody, it would be make sure you use the networking opportunities that are provided.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
absolutely. Because it's definitely all about that connections, whether it's from
them telling you about like a group exhibition that you think they'll be a good fit for, or even just like having other creative friends to go to events with. I feel like that's definitely a momentum builder. Which, yes, it's been just about a year since leaving your full-time job. So I'm curious if you don't mind backtracking a little bit from that. When did you first start seeing quilting as something more than a hobby? And can you talk a little bit more about that transition over into full-time artist?
Yeah, well, I will say that I thought quilting was a hobby for it until I quit my job, but my husband will tell you that probably straight away it was a second job. So I think within about 3 years of making quilts, maybe even less, maybe two, I was already submitting work into magazines. So the quilting world has quilt magazines that provide patterns. And you can submit those patterns and they get accepted or not. And I started off with Love Patrick Quilting. And then I ha also won a design competition, which I didn't realize when you do a design competition, you actually get the fabric and you're supposed to make it. So then I had to make a quilt, and that went into a magazine with the pattern and everything as well. So I kind of was working after I finished my day job, probably till about 3 a.m. in the morning, pretty within the first 2 to 3 years. So I think that's why my husband calls it. I had deadlines and everything. So he said, once you hit a deadline and made money from it, then that's it. It's a
It's a
second job.
job. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and as
We
a
concur.
fellow full-time artist with a full-time day job, that is definitely no easy feat. And I think many of our listeners who are teetering that line can definitely attest to that. It's a full-time job even after you get home from that job.
Yeah, well, and then I took on teaching, which included travel and everything else too. So, but I've always enjoyed sharing what I learned. So it's not so much the teaching I enjoy, it's the sharing and being able to see people develop their own ideas. So that
The
started pretty
community.
quickly too. As soon as I was doing patterns, I think I was also teaching. So all of that all at once. So.
There's the community aspect again, too. Plus, quilting has a long history of having a community aspect to it, you know, and how people back in the day would pass information, you know, both generational and also the happenings of the day. It was all through quilting groups, essentially, or different types of textile and sewing and craft groups. So that's awesome. Great, great community tradition in there.
Yes.
Yeah, and as someone who I am obviously not as well versed in the history of quilt making as of course you are, but I think one thing that I've always kind of observed with the quilt making is it's a super interesting combination of like design, fine art, craft. Of course, you're making these objects with your hands, but they look very like constructed, like very intentional. But especially the quilts that you make, you're making them for art venues like galleries and museums that which are very different than, let's say, a quilt that are intended for bedding or a comfort. So I'm curious, do you consider the pieces that you make more art objects, functional items, or like a little bit of both?
I think I'd go with a little bit of both because, like the piece on the wall that I've got behind me at the moment is going to be a cushion for a wood bench. I suckered my husband into making me some wood benches for my show, but I didn't get the cushions done, so I'm working on those now. So I think it can be both. I don't restrict myself to just being fine art. There's times where I want a quilt to be comforted. And wrap myself up in it or give it to a friend or a family member because of the importance of me that handmade object. But there are definitely pieces that I wouldn't use that I would consider art, but most of my quilts are at least 60 by 60 inches, so which means they can either be an art piece or used as a lap size quilt.
Nice.
I am trying to. I think it's been really interesting watching the art world in the last, say, 12 months, because I think I feel a difference for quilting being more accepted, and specifically quilting, because weaving has kind of been there, and some other fiber arts have kind of always been splattered in there. But quilting has really been considered craft, and other than a couple of folks like Jeez Bend and Denise Schmidt, I think it's always been kind of a little bit on the outside. So I'm happy. I've seen a huge difference in the last, especially the last 6 months, of quilts being accepted more into exhibitions and shows and other things like that, which is exciting. So I really want to keep pushing that boundary of having quilts being seen as art and accepted as art.
Yeah. Hey, and it's about time. I'm like, I want to say, when I was researching the topic, it may have been the Whitney. They had an exhibition back in the 70s all about quilts, trying to break through that mold of like, can it be art? And the answer was, yes, it can. So I love that idea of like, yeah, let's continue because it is as valid a medium as any other, you know, in terms of fine art. It's just that it also has a potentially functional side to it, you know. Which I love that idea, but thank you for clarifying that question. I've always been curious. I see some of them on display and I'm like, but could you sleep with it? And the answer is depending which one.
Yes, like my recent show, there's one quilt that I would probably I might end up giving away as a bed quilt, but the rest of them are definitely
Art.
more art pieces than functional pieces.
Yeah, well, and they could still be draped over a beautiful sofa type situation. You just wouldn't recommend sleeping with them. But they could still have a semi-functional decorative, you know, element to it. Not just, they don't have to be on a wall, and that's it. Like a painting, you know, that's pretty much all you get. It's, you know, stuck up on a wall unless it's a special construction. But with that in mind, and some of the things we've been discussing, of course, I do want to talk to you, of course, about like how you've been building some of this momentum. And with that, I'd like to ask you, what are some of your long-term goals as an artist, and how often do you revisit them? You know, one or two, one or two.
So, well, I don't really have like long-term goals. So I try to plan out goals for the year, but I would say I use them as guidelines. I'm not a good person to stick to. I make a lot of plans, but they are all guidelines. I never stick to them religiously, and that this has to be done at this time or anything. So, this year I'd like to. I've at least I looked at my goals. I think I've at least accomplished maybe 50% of them already in the first quarter. Thank you. You know,
Yes,
one of
love
them was,
that. It's huge.
one of them was showing at a museum. So obviously, I
Check.
have a piece at North Carolina Museum of Art at the moment, which is huge to have quilts in at a contemporary art museum. So I'm thrilled about that, and it's so exciting. I've also started showing out of state, so I have art fields at the beginning of May, which is in
Nice.
South Carolina, and I have a piece there at the Tracks Visitor Art Center.
Love that
And
one.
I was happy to
That's
land
a
up there.
great location. That is a great location.
And then I just signed a contract for another solo show in Virginia in Petersburg in May. So, then the other side was the financial side, and I've hit my financial goal with the quilt classes that I've got planned for by the end of the year. But that's, you know, I've got a couple of week-long teaching gigs in Oregon, which is fantastic. I'm excited to go see a new state that is new to me. And yeah, so things have been eventuating or coming to fruition really quickly. I thought I'd have a quiet second half of the year, but I will say that it just seems to be keeping on going. And I think
That's
I'm
always
here
how
for.
it works out. You're always like, okay, great. After I get past this milestone, it'll be calm. I have nothing planned. And you just keep like running after that calm time, which I don't know. I think that's, I mean, obviously a great place to be in as an artist, where you, I feel like you really have been gaining that momentum. It's kind of what Adriana and I refer to as like you're almost like outrunning your goals, which is a great problem to have. You're like, wait, this was my year-long goal and it's already April and I've already checked it off. Like, okay,
So now what?
I guess I have to reset some goals because you just keep hitting them, which is incredible.
Yeah, it's a lot though. I will say, I'm very appreciative, but I'm trying. I'm an overthinker, so I have to calm myself every so often. I'm nervous about the summer because I have basically 6 weeks away. I have 3 weeks in Michigan. I come back for 1 week and then I fly out to Oregon for 3 weeks. So,
Yes,
yeah,
perfect. You're on the move.
it's going to be my husband and son will be here by themselves for 6 weeks. So we'll see how that goes.
It's gonna be great. You may come back and be like, what happened? Okay, we're not talking.
Luckily, it's the summer, right? So what can go wrong? Touch
That's
wood.
true. That's true. Probably not. It'll be fun. No, that's perfect. Now, Michelle, along those lines, obviously, some of these opportunities that we're talking about, as you make those connections, you know, it leads to the next thing, it leads to the next thing, et cetera, right? So some of them are going to happen through word of mouth, which is fantastic. We all love an invitational, let's be real. When it just kind of like, you know, knock on the door, would you like to do this exhibition? Why, yes, I would. Thank you. But aside from those that literally are coming back as a result of networking and other opportunities you've, you know, you've gone after, how about the ones that you seek for yourself, or you're still going after yourself? How do you seek out those opportunities to showcase or sell your work? And have you encountered any venues that are hesitant to exhibit textiles because the format is, you know, maybe not something they're used to?
I've been a little bit more selective this year on what I apply for. To be honest, I wasn't expecting to get the Oxbow residency first time. I had heard through the grapevine that you have to apply a few years before and get your name out there. So to be one of the 12, and I think they had 618 applicants.
That's
So to be
amazing.
what? Thank
Congratulations.
you. To be one of those 12 straight away was kind of a little mind blowing. It's a
You're like,
little.
I applied for this out of like practice. I didn't actually plan on getting it.
Exactly. So it took a bit of reorganizing schedules and stuff. So I don't know whether it's because I'm being a little more selective and making sure I choose things. I'm trying to choose things that benefit where my art is showing and benefit me as an artist and just strengthens my portfolio, so to speak, or CV. I no to that had any pushback on textiles because right now my acceptance rate for things I apply for is about 95%,
It's huge.
which is huge.
Amazing.
So I've had to become more selective because I'm now struggling. I keep everything in a spreadsheet, but I'm now struggling on working out, well, I can't apply for this because this piece is over here and this piece is over here. So I've had to become a little more selective and choose a little bigger, to be honest.
Yes.
We'll see how some of those bigger opportunities come out.
Yeah, I think especially because obviously the work you make, as we've talked about, it's there are longer timelines in terms of your like creation process. It's not necessarily something where, oh, well, you can make two or three more pieces in like a week if you were to like really focus. Like these are several week long projects from design to creation. So if you have a limited inventory, and just buy it limited, even if you had 100, that's still limited by how many applications you can have. Yeah, there is like the logistics of, okay, where is Where are all of my pieces and when will this one be available? Which I think is kind of the perfect segue into you mentioned having a spreadsheet for some of your pieces, but how do you stay organized with these workshops, exhibitions, staying in contact with collectors, and all these opportunities? Is it mainly through like a spreadsheet and those timelines?
Yeah, I do have a spreadsheet. There's another quilter, Kelly Spell, who had shared how she collects or stores her, where she shipped her quilts off to, what price she's put them at. I now keep all my artist statements for individual pieces written as I go, and they're stored in OneDrive so that I can find them easily. I also link to them in the spreadsheet so that it's just easy to submit pieces and I don't have to rewrite it 50 times. So the spreadsheet has everything from what I've applied to, where pieces are, exhibitions, where they are. Also because I forget and I'm like, oh,
Yes.
I think I had a piece that I needed to pick up. When was that? So all that's in the spreadsheet. So mostly spreadsheet driven. I also try and do a newsletter monthly from my web page. That was a little not so monthly this year because I just sent one out and one in January because it was just so busy with had
Busy, yeah.
three events in a month, so it was just so busy.
Yeah. Oh, that's absolutely perfect. Plus, I love spreadsheets. But we can talk about databases, the next step, which I know you know about. You do come from, which I don't think we talked about very much. You do come from the software industry,
I
technology.
do.
Yeah, you're very, very familiar.
And I used to be out in database specialist, so I know all about the
You know all about the data.
databases.
Spreadsheet is the baby version. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all I can manage right now.
Hey, that's okay too. Now, Michelle, is there something you wish to do in your art career that you haven't had the chance to do yet? That you're like, oof, oof, I'd love this goal.
I think my biggest goal right now would be to be able to show in one of the biggest cities on the East Coast. So when I say bigger cities, let's go big. New York, Chicago, Miami. I would love to show somewhere there. I'd love to be in one of the modern art museums, but they're probably real big goals and dreams. As far as near future, I would say I don't feel like I've missed out on anything. It's weird moving from the quilt community, even though I've been doing that like 8 years, 9 years before I moved into the art world. Those communities don't overlap very much. So I really consider myself an emerging artist because of the fact that I have had to learn everything from the start, all over again, for the different communities. So that's been, I didn't expect that. So I'm really thrilled for the year that I've had to be where I am. So I don't think I've really missed out on anything.
Yeah, I think you are totally right in that. Kind of from the outsiders looking in, and even what we talked about earlier, I think you're totally right in that. I definitely think there's a recent shift in the art world from a museum or gallery space to where there is this, at least in our local area, this uptick of opportunities where they want to highlight the quilting and that merging of those two worlds. So it kind of feels like that perfect timing to where you're at that intersection to where it's not like you are brand new to quilting, obviously, but you're new to the art world. And the art world is kind of new to adapting quilting. So you're kind of at that perfect intersection of I'm very experienced over here in this area that the art world wants to highlight more. And so being able to apply for all those opportunities, they're like, great, this is like the perfect type of artist that we want to showcase, which is like a great ride or wave to be riding. And we're just so excited for you and very proud of you too, because it's such a cool conversation. I think with any new medium in the art world to where like it just opens up more social conversations, cultural conversations, and the exploration of a new medium on display is always very fun to observe. So it's a very exciting time. But real quick, we love to ask all of our guests how they define success. But first, we're going to take a quick word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by our Level Up Artist courses.
We understand that life as a modern artist can be both exciting and overwhelming. Plus, there's a lot of information out there. So what do visual artists actually need?
We've spent countless hours of trial and error, weeding through tons of information to find the gold, so you don't have to waste your time going down those endless rabbit holes.
In addition to weekly calls, we have created video course modules to cover everything from artist documents to exhibition prep, social media to technology, sales strategies, artist mindset, PDF resources, templates, and so much more.
Ready to get started? Head on over to levelupartists.com to learn more, get immediate access, and level up your career today.
Welcome back, everybody. So one of the questions we love to ask every guest is, how do you define success as an artist?
Hitting all my goals. I think it's multifaceted, right? So right now, I think I'm doing really well on exposure and getting my work out there, and I've had some amazing opportunities. And that kind of kicked off with the Raleigh Fine Arts exhibit and showing at CAM. And I know folks at CAM had said that this is the second time that they'd had a quilt showing at CAM. Aaliyah, who's part of ArtSpace, was in there the month beforehand. So that was thrilling, you know, being able to hang it, like I said, at North Carolina Museum of Art. Everything happened so close together. I'm still kind of processing all the excitement around exhibiting where I've been able to exhibit. My next phase is making sure that I can still earn a living as an artist. I think I'm hoping the exposure leads to more sales. Not that I feel like sales is the only success factor, but it's one of the factors. I think from a revenue standpoint, I'm hitting it with teaching. So that was the other big thing, learning is the difference between teaching art versus quilting is a very different price point. income stream, I'm definitely staying in the quilting world for the teaching side. And then just happiness and health, and both mental and physical health. They're kind of my three. So the exposure, the dollar values, the revenue, and then my health are kind of my three measurements for success. And since I quit my job, definitely got bonus points on reducing stress, which has been fantastic. I've also been able to focus a little bit more on health this year, and focusing on being more healthy mentally and physically. Like I said earlier, I tend to be an overthinker. So that includes going to bed at nighttime and having sometimes panic attacks and trying to manage those a little bit better, which has been a lot easier since I quit my job. So all of those things kind of contribute into what I consider success. My husband will say that I'm a way happier person and less grumpy. So that's a bonus.
Hey, that's exactly what mine says about me leaving the corporate world too. Yep.
Yeah.
Apparently there is a distinct difference in working, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours a week in a corporate environment to, even if I'm still working those hours on the art side of things, it's completely different. And the ability to do our own schedules. And if you're like, I want to, in the middle of the day, have a walk, you know, go to a park, or I don't know, do something nice for myself. You know, you don't have to ask permission to a boss and be like, can I just take the afternoon off because I'm not feeling well, or I'd like to go to a beach. you know, whatever. Like, you don't even have to ask. You just, I mean, yes, we have commitments too as professional working artists, but it's a lot easier to be like, okay, when do I have an afternoon that I can just literally bob off and go somewhere and just hang out?
I will say I was really lucky for the company I worked for because I could do a lot of those things. And I had an amazing team under me as well. So I had 65 people in my team. So I could always delegate. But one of my
That is a good point.
strongest things that I was adamant about was trying to make sure that folks took vacation and looked after their mental health. I think when you start going through some of those things, because I never used to have panic attacks, I think it's the stage in life I'm in. You start realizing how important it is for other people to also be doing that.
Yeah,
So,
absolutely. But now you don't have to worry about 65 people. Are you taking your mental health breaks? You only have to worry about you.
well,
Well, and your family. But
and my family. Well, especially because, you know, my son is dyslexic and he's a junior going into a senior next year. So that's a whole nother stress that I have. So
I mean,
it has a lot of,
being a
yes, has a
parent and
lot of
running a family
stresses.
is like a job in itself. So that's like
Yeah,
its
yeah.
own lifelong of stressors and anxiety that I'm sure you're being able to be there for.
Yeah, lots of ups and lots of downs. So,
Yeah.
and everything in between.
Hey, that's life.
Now, what is one piece of advice you wish you had heard before you got started on your creative journey?
I'm not sure if it's advice, but one thing that I wish I knew was the amount of admin that I was going to have to do as an artist. And, you know, I knew there would be some because you have to apply for things. I think there needs to be some kind of free beginner class on like what is an artist statement, what is a bio, what are short versions of those of 100 words, and what would 250 words look like? And because the number of times I've had to rewrite my artist statement and bio, I don't think I've been able to completely reuse one
Yeah, it's
ever.
always different variations. Then you have like 6-word documents that are all kind of the same, but there's like one sentence that's different. And yeah.
So the amount
Two
of admin.
words. Yeah,
Yeah.
so I
So
was gonna say
booking.
two words. Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say just booking in admin time. And I know you offload some of that, Adriana. It's definitely something once I'm earning enough money that I will look at because I probably spend about 2 days a week, so 16 hours, whether it's a newsletter or a blog post or Instagram or submitting for a grant or submitting for an exhibition, also portfolio. Like I thought, oh, once I have my portfolio, I'm good. But because it takes so long to make a quilt, whenever they say, oh, images in the last, you know, 10 images in the last 2 years, I'm like, oh, well, that's only half my portfolio. Now I have to go find more photos of the more recent work. Or there's a slant. It's, you know, I might have mentioned my cultural background or community, and then I need different pictures for my portfolio to back up what I put into the application. So, admin, I would say make sure don't be unrealistic about the amount of admin work you will get being a full-time artist or an artist part-time.
Yeah, well, I was gonna add to that. I think I got really lucky that before I quit corporate, one of the things that I did was I did interview artists. Unfortunately, I did not record it, any of it. But I did talk to a lot of working artists and ask them questions specifically about the business side. And I was like, I'm not interested in what brush you use, if you teach classes, what your style is, none of that. I just want to know about the business side. And of the ones that did respond specifically about my business questions, one of the things that kept coming up was the admin side. You know, they're like, if you're lucky, it's 50%. If you're lucky. Some of them were like, depending what kind of opportunities you're going after, it could be 70% admin. and only 30% like the actual creation of art. So at least I went into it with my eyes wide open, but I did want to add like things like length, like changing the length of artist statements and things like that. I do use ChatGPT. I'm like, can you make this longer? Can you make it shorter? And then I go and edit it because it's just the baseline. I can never use exactly what it gives me. It gets close, but never exactly what it gives me. And then yeah, some things if I can, I try to delegate some of it, you know, to my other members of my team. I make it sound like it's a lot of people. It's not. But or ask for help from other artists. But some of the other things you mentioned too, yeah, we're big proponents. Obviously, through the podcast is how we try to teach forward or share forward some of that information of like, yes, you need a newsletter. Yes, you need a, you know, website. Yes, you need. So we try through this podcast some of that educational approach. And of course, there's a lot of other artists too. With the resources on it. But I do think there needs to be more of that emphasis of like circling back to something you said earlier. The moment you're spending all these hours putting in all these applications, competitions, and there's money involved, it's a business and you need to treat it like that, you know? And that does involve some of that other admin stuff. So just kind
And
of
I was really lucky because I can, because of the job that I did have in the software world, I'm quite familiar with contracts and have written probably more than my fair share of the bulk of the contracts. So I was definitely not our legal, but I submitted work statements regularly. So that has carried over into this role, which I'm really thankful for, especially for my teaching contract, because there's things that I'm very adamant about when I teach and travel with that. But that also means my travel's covered, my expenses are covered,
Oh, yeah. As
all
much as you
those things
can.
to think about when reading through contracts and stuff. So I'm happy I have that background and get to bring that in. So there's that side of things too.
Silver lining of coming from corporate.
Yes.
Hey, there's good stuff in there too. There's good stuff in there too. Well, Michelle, if someone randomly hands you $100, what would you splurge on or invest in? It has to be something that brings you joy and relates to your art or business.
I would probably at this point buy some new ink for woodblock printing because I am still kind of starting out on that realm, so I don't have everything. To be honest, in both woodblock printing and sewing, $100 isn't going to get me very far. I might buy some bolts of a couple of bolts of fabric, but yeah,
I was
it's.
gonna say, I'm like, yep, you'd always get some fabric with that.
Yeah, but no, probably more on the woodblock printing side.
Nice.
I love that. Well, we're
Well,
excited to see maybe some woodblocks down the hall from us when you move into art space soon. But for our listeners, what exciting projects do you have coming up that they should know about in addition to moving into art space?
so obviously I'm going to Oxbow, so I'm excited because that is not a project-based residency. It's 3 weeks of just experimenting and playing. So
That's amazing.
it's also up in Michigan at like 2 hours from Chicago, right on Lake Michigan. So I'm going to take my camera with me as well. And so I'm hoping to get some good photos in too. So I'm super excited to spend the summer, you know, 3 weeks out of my summer there. So the next exhibition I've got is the other than Artfields is the I'm working with Petersburg Art League at their gallery, and we'll have a solo show there. I think it's starting June 14th through
Nice.
to August 3rd, and that's fun because it's an exhibition I've already had, so I get to have it travel somewhere, so I don't necessarily need to make any new work.
That's always really great. You can be like, great, pull all the work from here and then just put it in a new spot. Done.
We love
Yeah.
that kind.
But I have a few pieces I'm working on that I've been working on a while. There's a piece about having a conversation about invisible disabilities, having panic attacks, or my kid having dyslexia kind of has put me into the thought process of we don't talk about things very often, and invisible disabilities, because you can't see them openly, you never know what people are going through or what they might have in their life. So I'm really excited about work going back and working on that piece, since most of my exhibitions are done, or have things made. And then I just want to play, to be honest. I just want to go back, instead of having deadlines, just play with fabric and designs. I've got like three rattling around in my head right now that I haven't even. I and my art process is kind of interesting, because I design everything in my head. So by the time I get it on paper, I've decided on color, I've decided on shapes and everything, and then it edits and morphs along the way. But most of it's almost completely done by the time I put on paper. So they're going through my head right now.
Through
They're almost
the
ready for paper.
processor. I love it. Well, we're excited to see those pieces come to life. And for our listeners, how can they stay connected with you after they listen to today's episode?
So I have both an Instagram and a web page. And my web page, you'll have a pop-up with a newsletter sign up. So the web page is ml Wilkie, my surname, WILKIE.com, and then Instagram's with an underscore between the L and the W. Trying to stay consistent.
No, that of course, and we'll make sure to link all those things in the show notes. And would you mind staying with us a few extra minutes so we can discuss your transition from corporate to full-time artist on a bonus segment for our podcast supporters?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. Perfect. In the meantime, if you want to stay connected with us in between episodes, share your feedback, or have a question you would like for us to answer on the podcast, you can reach us through social media. I'm at Amay Art across all platforms.
And I'm at J Sanders Studio on all platforms. And if you want to follow the podcast, we are at Level Up Artists on Instagram. You can also visit levelupartists.com to hear the rest of this conversation and become a podcast supporter.
This will also give you access to amazing off-the-record conversations like the ones we're going to have with Michelle, with our guest, the art community platform, and it helps to keep the podcast going.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.